Pro-Life to the Max is produced and broadcast by WOMB 89.9 FM Catholic Radio in Bloomington, Indiana.
Ave Maria, welcome to Pro-Life to the Max, a weekly half-hour radio program under the patronage of St. Maximilian Mary Kolbe that is dedicated to keeping you informed on local, state, and national pro-life issues and efforts and inspiring you to get involved. I'm Rhonda Branham, here along with my co-host, Monica Seifker. Thank you for being with us today. Well, we have an incredible couple of shows lined up for you over these next 2 weeks as we interview Dr. Judith A. Reisman, research professor and director of the Child Protection Institute at Liberty University. Dr. Reisman will be joining us momentarily to talk about her thorough and well-documented research on Alfred Kinsey, a zoologist who founded the Kinsey Institute as an affiliate of Indiana University back in 1947. These next two programs are going to be a clarion call to all Catholics, especially right here in Bloomington, to take on some serious prayer and penance for a rebirth of purity in our country. Before we bring Dr. Reisman on, Monica's going to start us off in prayer.
My God, you have given us a body to keep pure, clean, and healthy for your service and for our eternal happiness. Forgive us for all of our unfaithfulness in this great responsibility. Forgive us for every mean use which we have made of your gifts in thought, word, or deed since our rebirth as your adopted children in baptism and our registration as soldiers of Christ on the day of our confirmation. Create in us a clean heart, O God, and give us a steadfast will that we may be a strength to others around us. Teach us to respect our bodies and the bodies of our fellow creatures. Help us to see the glory of perfect manhood in Jesus Christ and of perfect womanhood in Mary Immaculate. Inspire all of us with such love for the ideals for which our Savior lived and died that all our passions and energies will be caught up into the enthusiasm of His service, and evil things will lose their power. May our bodies be the servants of our souls, and may both body and soul be your servants. May we be among the number of those whom Jesus spoke. Blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God. Amen.
Let's go now to this week's In the News.
The American political journalism company Politico is calling the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruling in support of President Trump's directive to partially defund Planned Parenthood a major blow to the abortion giant. Back in April, the Trump administration instituted a rule change on Title X family planning funding, preventing recipients from referring patients for abortions and requiring abortion providers to physically and financially separate their abortion facilities from their centers providing birth control. It was estimated that the regulation would affect Planned Parenthood to the tune of a loss of $60 million annually in federal taxpayer dollars. The federal court's Thursday ruling lifts the national injunctions ordered by lower federal courts in Oregon and Washington state, as well as a statewide injunction in California, while lawsuits filed by at least 20 states continue to work their way through the courts. Politico reports that the three appeals court judges believe the Trump administration will likely prevail in the legal battle over the Title X family planning program, since the Supreme Court upheld similar Reagan-era rules almost 30 years ago, though they were reversed by the Clinton administration before taking effect. And on Wednesday, the Democratic-controlled U.S. House passed a nearly $1 trillion spending bill that would restore taxpayer funding for international abortions. The bill repeals the Mexico City policy, which ends federal funding of foreign abortion agencies. President Trump enacted the policy soon after he took office and even expanded its reach to prevent funds from getting to any foreign non-governmental organizations that in turn give to other foreign groups in the abortion industry. When the plan was authorized by Trump, the International Planned Parenthood Foundation estimated that it would lose $100 million in federal funding. The spending bill now moves on to the Senate, where it is unlikely to pass at a Republican majority. Indiana pro-life leaders and organizations are calling for statewide prayer upon learning that the unlicensed abortion facility in South Bend will open its doors the week of June 24th. As reported earlier, Whole Women's Health Alliance won an injunction injunction from a federal judge on May 31st, allowing it to begin doing abortions in South Bend without a state license. Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill has filed an appeal against the ruling. "Women and children deserve better than this," said Mike Fichter, president and CEO of Indiana Right to Life. "We used to hear that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. These days, abortion proponents want women to shout their abortions, and now they want to subject them to abortions at this unlicensed facility. We are issuing a statewide call to prayer today, mourning the lives that will be lost in South Bend, and remembering the women whose lives may be in grave danger thanks to the activist decision of a federal judge. May God have mercy on us all." And finally, approximately 15 unborn babies were killed this past Thursday at the Bloomington Planned Parenthood. Several out-of-state abortions continue to add to the number as women from various Indiana counties arrive as well to have their unborn children killed. It was noted that three women ended up choosing life on Thursday to the joy of all those praying and present. Please keep these women, their babies, and their families in your prayers. And that's your weekly In the News.
Monica, we've said many times on these shows, and we'll say it again now because it's so important, the roots of abortion find themselves entrenched in sins against purity, chastity, and modesty. Abortion exists because the beautiful gift of human sexuality has been so demeaned. Today, everyone is seen as having the absolute right to indulge their sexual appetite and urges in nearly whatever way they see fit and without any complications getting in the way, like a pregnancy. Our society's attitude toward this sacred gift is one of anything goes, and any prohibitions on sexual activity are roundly mocked. We are currently living in a culture of such aberrant sexual practices that it's hard to imagine any other time in history that can even begin to rival these times in which we live. And what most people don't know is that Bloomington, Indiana, and the Kinsey Institute in particular are ground zero for this sexual revolution.
Mm-hmm. Rhonda, I'm always amazed at how many people have never heard of Alfred Kinsey and the Kinsey Institute, a man and an organization that I don't hesitate to say are single-handedly responsible for changing the sexual attitudes and mores of millions of people, including those within our own Catholic Church, and desensitizing people to some of the most perverted, not to mention harmful, behaviors ever. And it didn't happen overnight. Kinsey's work started here in Bloomington back in the late 1940s, and the country began to reap its rotten fruit during the 1960s with the sexual revolution. And now, here in the early 21st century, we've got sexual anarchy going on, and it's proved disastrous, with millions upon millions of unborn children being slain, a total breakdown in marriage and family life, STDs out of control with enormous health implications, and all of the depression, anxiety, and substance and drug abuse that comes with this. Alfred Kinsey and his votaries have done incalculable damage to the soul of our nation, especially our children. And Dr. Judith Reisman is going to help us understand how all of this came about and why we must pray and work unceasingly to reverse the damage done by Alfred Kinsey and begin to build up a culture of purity.
And we need to warn listeners right now that this is mature subject matter. So if there are younger children listening, it may be best that they not be exposed to this. We are going to do our best to state the facts with propriety and as modestly as possible so as not to offend the senses. Our intent is to just draw the veil back a bit so that we can be made aware of the grave and numerous perversions that have been and continue to be pushed right in our own backyard and there at Indiana University. If we can educate ourselves, even if just briefly, on this important topic, it will be enough to arouse zeal within our souls to take action and to pray intensely for a rebirth of purity, chastity, and modesty.
And Rhonda, one final comment before we bring Dr. Reisman on. On May 13th in 1846, the bishops of the United States of America adopted a decree by which they chose the Blessed Virgin Mary under the title of Immaculate Conception as the patroness of our land. Now, the bishops had to ask permission from the Holy See in order to specifically use that that title for Our Lady, as the dogma of her Immaculate Conception had not yet been proclaimed, and Pope Pius IX did approve the U.S. bishop's choice the following year in 1847, and it is said that by asking for permission to use the word Immaculate, the American bishops helped to influence Pius IX's solemn declaration of the Immaculate Conception that would eventually come on December the 8th in 1854. Now, if there's one thing that would enrage Satan, I think this act of our bishops making the Immaculate Mother of God our patroness would be it. A country dedicated to Mary's Immaculate Conception, the Queen of Purity, would have a target on its back. Satan wanted to upend this important spiritual protection made by our bishops, and he did so by inducing and seducing Our Lady's children, her children of America, to acts of impurity in order to mock her purity. So, our dear listeners, God has placed you right here in Bloomington and in the United States during this time for a very special purpose. We are to be Our Lady's army of chaste soldiers fighting to the death for the cause of purity. Hopefully this show and the next will get you fired up to do so.
Well, Dr. Judith Reisman has some impressive credentials as a top researcher, author, historian, and teacher. For the past 40 years or so, she has investigated the fraudulent sex science research and education of Alfred Kinsey and has authored such books as Kinsey, Sex and Fraud, Kinsey, Crimes and Consequences, and Sexual Sabotage. Based on her work, The Lancet demanded that the Kinsey Institute be investigated for deliberately covering up massive sex crimes against children and for fraudulent science. Dr. Reisman has been involved in international government hearings on science fraud, child sexual abuse, pornography, drugs, and other critical issues of our time. Dr. Reisman is currently research professor and director for the Child Protection Institute at Liberty University School of Law. We are so blessed to have Dr. Reisman on the phone with us today to help educate our community about atrocities that have gone on in our own backyard that were instrumental in tearing down the sexual laws and amores that had previously safeguarded marriage and family life. Dr. Judith Reisman, welcome to Pro-Life to the Max.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here with you.
Okay, well, Dr. Reisman, thanks again so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us, because we're so grateful to have you on and just filled with gratitude for all the investigative work you've done in exposing what Alfred Kinsey and his so-called research are truly all about. Now, the Kinsey Institute sits about 20 minutes from us right here in the studio and is located in this innocuous-looking building in the heart of the IU campus. And I can tell you that many people here in Bloomington have never heard about this place, its founder, or its mission. And Rhonda and I want to do our part to help change that, because it's vitally important that we get this place shut down for reasons that you're going to be talking with us about today.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I can think of nothing better right now than to have the Kinsey Institute shut down publicly, you know, so that the world can become aware of what it has stood for, covered up, and justified for all these years. It's all, what, 70 years almost. Yeah, it is 70 years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Reisman, in your book, Sexual Sabotage, you say that, quote, Alfred Kinsey sought to destroy the morality and religious legacy of Judeo-Christianity that had protected marriage, family, the authority of parents, and the sanctity of childhood. But packaging his lies as science, speaking directly to man's most base and powerful fears and urges, Kinsey deceived America, end quote. So before we get into the charge you lay out against Kinsey, let's back up and briefly talk about the moral landscape of our country right around the time the Comstock laws were enacted back in the late 1870s.
Yeah, well, the Comstock laws were enacted because the country was really struggling. I mean, people were coming from poverty-ridden areas of the world. It was very hard at the time, and prostitution was legal. It was everywhere. If it wasn't legal, it was sort of legal. And poverty dominated the landscape, and Comstock was a sort of a, they called him an uptight, which meant that he was a very moral individual who came into the New York area and saw advertisements for, you know, published everywhere, advertisements for people having sex with prostitutes and for various other things. And so he started to work with the legislature and put, and really one man alone, backed by a history of moral belief, brought about what was called the Comstock Laws, in which restricted, made illegal the trade in contraception, the trade in, well, made, of course, abortion with very serious punishment, and promiscuity, and sort of started to work to get the moral standards back on, you know, in place. And what aided that, too, was that there was a growing economic boon a bit, so that people were not as hard up for existence. And slowly, his laws, they called the Comstock Laws, which were really just legislative acts, began to take hold, and the police corruption was cut back, and the general tone of the cities, because that's where the trouble was in the cities, began to resemble more like, you know, the outlying, the rural areas, and mm-hmm. people kind of started to straighten out. They were being arrested for bad things. They would go to jail. They would be repudiated by others. And so, yeah, and the films that emerged out of the early film industry were as bad as they could be until the Catholic organizations decided they would shut that down. And so all of this was going on, this huge, well, boiling cauldron of change was taking place. But slowly but surely, it started to straighten out, and the laws were straightened out. They were made tougher. And the public began to get back on its feet.
Good. So these laws straightened a lot of things out then.
So what exactly did the Comstock Laws prohibit then? Was it just prostitution?
No, they prohibited the advertisement of contraception. You know, that seems today to be ridiculous, but it was very important, because the advertisement for contraception was really what was a precursor to the pill, really, in a way. Mm-hmm. And people began to think that it was okay to be as promiscuous as they could be. I don't mean general, you know, in general, but often, you know, people, males, mothers even, would prostitute their daughters and their sons, by the way, to allow them to bring money into the family. So all the, but these were city things. These were things that were going on in the cities, and people outside of the cities condemned it. We had a huge venereal disease problem at the time. There's syphilis and gonorrhea, and women were paying the price for their husbands, you know, carrying on with prostitutes. Women were losing their babies. They were dying, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was not a good time. Mm-hmm. And it took a lot to bring us to where we straightened it out. The white slave trade was what they called it at the time. You know, young girls would be tricked into prostitution. They couldn't get out once they were in it. The price we were paying was enormous. And we began to understand that the price was not worth what we were getting out of it. So changes were put into place.
Yeah, so mostly by probably Judeo-Christians, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then let's talk about how Kinsey, then let's okay, so we've got this, we're getting things under control, and we're settling into this great, good Judeo-Christian value, natural law-based system, and along comes Alfred Kinsey to try to tear down those laws and those customs that we're making for, you know, now strong marriages and families. So tell us, who was Alfred Kinsey?
Well, it's an interesting question. We only know certain amounts about his early childhood. And I have always suspected, but there's no proof, I have always suspected that his childhood was interfered with. I believe he was sexually assaulted, sexually abused somewhere along the line, because his behavior toward women and toward, well, he became homosexual, by sort of intermittently bisexual, I suppose, and his need for great pain, sexual pain, would indicate that he had had these kinds of experiences, that really he became a sexual psychopath. And as a sexual psychopath, which he kept hidden as much as possible, he graduated from college in Boeing, I guess it was, or whatever, one of the colleges, and went on to Harvard. He did go to Harvard. Certainly, it was a hotbed of eugenics at that time. A lot of promotion of the new biology, which was claiming that we are all animals at best. Kinsey, disproved that. He said we were really just like insects, not like animals. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So he graduated at Harvard. After Harvard, he applied to Indiana, which was a nothing college at the time. Mm-hmm. It was, nobody really knew that much about it. He applied, and he was employed by Indiana University. But he was employed as a zoologist. But anyway, he compared that to the study of human sexual behavior. He said there's no difference between measuring human sexual behavior and that of the wingspread of an insect, which gives you the idea that the man was quite psychotic already. To be able to make that statement.
Yeah, so was there a good fit between Indiana University and Alfred Kinsey, especially in regards to the eugenics movement? Because Indiana, at this time when they're hiring Alfred Kinsey, you know, they're at the forefront of passing this forced sterilization for confirmed criminals and idiots and imbeciles. And so do you think there was a good match there? And was that the reason why maybe he was brought in?
Yes, I do. Because he was one of the strong advocates of eugenics. He insisted, they would never let me have the copy of his paper, but I tried to get it. But he insisted that at least 10% of the population should be sterilized, should never be allowed to have children. And I can assure you it wasn't his 10% he was talking about. Yes, I think it was a very good fit, because Indiana has had the longest history, you know, of eugenics. I don't think the major case of Buck versus Bell was not with Indiana, was it? But that case went to the Supreme Court. And, you know, in that situation, this young lady was sterilized, as well as thousands of other normal, fine, you know, whatever, you know, anybody in the United States. We had this massive period of sterilization, which was referred to by Hitler Germany when they were starting to deal with what to do with the useless eaters, is what they called them, with people who were infirm or with the wrong religion and that sort of thing. So, yeah, the Germans based a great deal of their decisions in terms of eugenics by pointing to the United States of America and saying, look, this is what they're doing, and we should certainly adopt these procedures.
Now, how did Kinsey then, so he came as a zoologist to Indiana universities, and how did he get into this sexology then?
Well, secretly, the standard line given by Indiana University is that there was no information in existence about human sexual behavior, and that his students came to him, and that was part, of course, in this film that was produced starring Liam Neeson as Kinsey. Well, I think he always planned on doing sex research.
Okay.
He always planned on that.
Okay.
And he couldn't really do it until Wells became president. He and Wells had a very intimate relationship. I think that, you know, there's been more suspicion that Herman Wells was of the same belief system as Kinsey. He never did come out as a homosexual, but there's a lot of indication, absolutely, that was the case.
And
as soon as he became president, Kinsey really got carte blanche. He could kind of do what he wished. And what he had done was to arrange the line, that's what I was saying, which came out of the Kinsey Institute, that all these students were asking questions about sex, and he was such an agreeable guy that they would ask him, you know, these questions. And for a marriage course, he would start to look to see if there was research, but there was just no research. And so he thought to himself, says the line, that somebody has to do it. And so he decided he would do the research so that he could answer the students' questions. In that Kinsey, they made the most ludicrous claims about, you know, folks at that time that their belief system was at college level was so restricted that they did not know, well, you know, if you kissed somebody, you'd get pregnant? Okay. He never dealt with the fact that we in this country went through the roaring 20s, you know, and the speakeasies and all that sort of thing. And we managed to engage in whatever sexual activity was necessary to reproduce for the next few generations. But anyway, so that was one of the lines. And he quietly arranged, he debated about what was being taught about sex, and he quietly arranged to produce a series of sex lectures for his students, allegedly only married students at first, and then only married and only engaged students at first, and then kids who seriously had questions about sex. So he would do these filmed presentations with lots of what we recognize now as pornography. He would use much of that to shock his students. And then all this for a, quote, marriage course. But there were other people who were teaching that course and who did not like what he was doing. And so the story goes that he was told by Herman Wells that he would have to no longer teach the marriage course, but he could do the research on sexuality, ask the kids questions, which I think was all put up. That never happened. It's a story, so that he could get into these more intimate questions.
Dr. Reisman, we're going to have to stop right there as we're running out of time. But never fear, we're going to pick up right where we left off on next week's show. Thanks for being with us today on Pro-Life to the Max. As always, may we heed the warning of St. Maximilian Mary Kolbe that the most deadly poison of our time is indifference. Let's pray for one another that we may be consumed with the desire to save lives and souls, to give the greatest possible honor and glory to God. Ave Maria.
Ave Maria.
Thank you for listening to Pro-Life to the Max, a production of WOMB Catholic Radio. To learn more about this program and how you can help us to continue to produce and broadcast this content, visit us online at WOMBradio.com.